and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Scare Blast podcast. And now here's your host, Lisa Burton.
Hi everybody, welcome to Scare Blast podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Burton, and today we are talking with actor, improviser, writers, Miss Amy Thompson, and actor, improviser, writers, two of them, there's two of them, guys, but I'm saying it two times, Miss Sarah Hoffman.
Hello.
Hooray, hi ladies. We just watched it. This is one of three movies that I'm watching and then talking with the people that I watched it with. The Thing. This is John Carpenter's The Thing, which is the mm-hmm. first John Carpenter movie of this series. Do you like scary movies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Sarah Hoffman says yes. Yes,
I definitively like scary movies. I like being scared. Uh-huh. I like having the residual effect of having been scared.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean to you? Like the nervousness of being like nervous for, I don't know, or just the visceral like jump scare thing.
Yeah, I like the feeling of a jump scare, mm-hmm. and I end up carrying a lot of those images that cause the initial scare like around with me.
Yeah.
So like the first time I saw The Ring, a lot of the imagery is disturbing, but the one that really stuck to me is like they do a very quick like closet door opening on one of the victims, and you see her face for a second, and that particular image like stuck with me and like would sit in my head when I looked at my own closet or like wanted to go to bed.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of like images that stick.
What about you, Amy?
I only got into scary movies after studying film in college.
Okay.
I was kind of a sheltered movie child.
Mm-hmm.
My mother didn't let me watch anything that would scare her, and she was scared of Ghostbusters. So Ghostbusters was the extreme to which I could go. And my father is very anti-violent, so like I remember watching The Rocketeer and him turning it off after the first two scenes because there's a gun in the first two scenes. And my dad's like, she can't. She's scared. She shouldn't watch this. Like, this will affect her as an adult and a human in the world, so she can't watch this.
Yeah.
So that being said, I was pretty, poorly situated to watch scary movies. Like, I grew up thinking that they were too scary for me.
Yeah, totally.
And after, like, learning about horror films and thrillers through the lens of a filmmaker, I got really into them as a way to tell a story or present metaphor or present, like, a like social commentary on the world at large.
Yeah.
I learned to appreciate them by learning about, like, how they're made and how they've changed over the years.
So, can you guys summarize this movie for me?
All right.
Take it away.
So, there is a team of researchers in the Arctic.
I think it's Antarctic.
In the cold. They're way up in the cold. It's very snowy everywhere. And we open on a dog being chased by some dudes in a helicopter who keep shooting at this dog.
Mm-hmm.
We find out they're like Norwegian researchers. They've been trying to kill this dog, but one of them gets shot by an American research team that is like standing there. So they're trying to figure out what the deal is with these Norwegians, and the dog is spending time now in the American research station. It becomes like very quickly apparent that this dog is not a dog when it's locked in with other actual dogs,
mm-hmm.
And transforms into a nasty alien life form.
Mm-hmm.
They find a body at the Norwegian base when they're trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of like, you know, mangled extraterrestrial or like a human that has been modified body. And bring it back to their base to do studies on it. And so they're trying to think, they're like, okay, well, this is something that can take the form of other life forms. And somehow they also figure out that the bodies aren't dead. and so, like, very quickly, they realize that no one is what they appear, or it's possible that the thing has taken on the characteristics of a person, you
mm-hmm.
know, that these people that they have been working with for a while are not themselves. So then it turns kind of into a Clue situation where they're like, it's a whodunit, and like, how do we figure this out?
Mm-hmm.
Let's tie him up and like test some blood. Let's lock a guy out in the cold in a shed and like, see what happens. Meanwhile, like, none of that is actually going to plan. Like, they continue to be scared and surprised by monsters who are impersonating people. Until at the end of the movie, we think we know that two people remain, but there's no way for them to know really which one of them is a thing or whether they are things. And that is the way that the movie closes, very ambiguously.
Yeah, I thought this film was interesting, that idea of, like, infighting, and nowadays, you know, this drew parallels to me with all of the, like, Walking Dead, storyline type things, or Armageddon type things, where you have, or Mad Max is another example of this, which was originally a 1980s film, but we see this resurgence, I think, in films that have this idea that when people are put under dire circumstances, they still develop this government, this sort of ruling thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's a conversation they all have where they're talking about who should lead them now that their, you know, leader was blown up or had become the thing or whatever. And so they're talking about that, and they make that decision. Different men come forward and say, I could be this. But many of them are so hot-headed. Kurt Russell steps forward finally as Mac or MacReady and is like, we should really have someone more level-headed. And after that, somehow it was just decided that he would be the leader.
And it's weird that his negative attitude is perceived as level-headed. Because throughout the film, he's the guy who's got this, like, badass anti-hero thing going where, like, he'll be like, well, I'll never get this. Or, like, he'll have some, like, tag that's, like, super negative, but also just, like, very dismissive.
Yeah.
So, like, he poured his drink into the computer and was like, nah, like, shut up, bitch,
or
whatever.
And every time
they burned anything, he's like, taken care of. Like, that's not a level-headed person. That's just, like, a pessimist.
And there was also, to that point, there was a moment where he was outside in the cold, and they were like, MacReady, you should really put your equipment on. And he's like, yeah. And then, like, rolled his eyes, and it was like, you're in Antarctica, in the wintertime. Put your fucking hat on, young man.
Like, see, everyone else is more likely prone to, like, violence.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we want someone level-headed who can just objectively say some, like, dark things really quickly.
Yeah.
Like,
what I read on Wikipedia was that I think Carpenter might have toyed with the idea that MacReady was a Vietnam vet, who was, like, a former Vietnam pilot, who had gotten, like, you know, pulled into doing research stuff. Which kind of makes sense, and, like, with the alcoholism, too, that makes sense of, like, not necessarily glorifying, like, former soldiers that have a very do-or-die attitude, but just, like, acknowledging that, like, in times of crisis, a person whose head is already in a, like, in a war mentality is going to be able to be the strongest leader.
Well, and to that same point, too, this also reminded me of sort of definitely being influenced by the Cold War mentality at the time where everyone was blaming everybody else. There's this idea of not knowing who's who, the spies,
among
all
you.
Of that. Like this monster's moving through everybody. It's literally a monster in this case, but it's a monster that's moving through people and you don't know what exactly it looks like until it rears its ugly head.
Yeah.
Which I thought also was just kind of interesting, and how the different tactics they use throughout the film to suss out who they think the monster might be. And to me, it wasn't until that, and now we're back to the blood scene, where Mac has decided that through this series of quote-unquote experiments, if you could call them that they've determined that the monster, when it separates from the main body, will still try and protect itself. It's a very gruesome scene where one of their mates, who had become a monster, his head gets chopped off in the fire of some kind, and the head turns itself into a separate being, kind of grows these legs and starts to crawl away. So Kurt Russell is like, well, if we get blood out of people, then we can burn the blood, and the blood will react if it's the monster blood, because it always tries to survive no matter what, which I thought was super interesting. And then, that tension just ramps up as he goes from person to person to person, trying to, in this scene where he's just, like, trying to determine where the monster is.
Yeah, that was very Clue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was. Yeah, yeah, it was very Clue. Yes.
Like one down the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another, something else I looked at online was saying that Carpenter was very aware of, like, the AIDS crisis beginning when he made the film. Hmm. And so, yeah, that idea of not having any idea, like, what your enemy really is, and then not knowing who has a thing. Yeah, that it's hiding out in people's bodies, and there's no outward sign of being infected.
Yeah, that is so scary, isn't it? I've been listening to this podcast a whole bunch. It's a a crime podcast. So every single one is about a murder, mm-hmm. and their tagline is that monsters are real. Is their tagline of it? Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting to listen to because it is that idea that like the murderers in these things are like you and me. Like they look like us. It's not like you can just tell a murderer from one person to the next. And we all grow up from children. We all look, you know, everybody looks like people. And then you find out that people can do these horrific things, you know. It's a really neat, this type of movie is a really neat, I think, thought experiment. Especially at the very end, the very last dudes. And you don't know, like, one of them might be the thing.
Well, it's weird because he says I don't think either of us is gonna do much to figure out whether or not we're the thing. He said something like, we're so spent from fighting and all of the action that led up to the two of us being in this burning shed that, like, neither of us really wants to take the next step to just test our blood and answer the question and maybe, like, eradicate the thing for one final last-ditch effort or whatever, and it's super weird. Like, I don't think the ambiguity serves it.
If you were to rate this movie in deformed bodies, 10 deformed bodies means it was a great movie, and you would recommend it to everyone, and that it's, like, one of the best movies you've ever seen. One deformed body is not very great, and is not a movie that you would ever recommend to anyone. How many deformed bodies would you give this movie?
I would give this movie a solid 4 deformed bodies.
Okay.
I would give it a good 4. Mainly because I think there are other movies in the genre that do what this movie does better. Or in a way that is more like aesthetically appealing to me.
How many deformed bodies would you give this movie?
I'd go up. I'd give it like a good 7. I think historically, like, it's important to see in the sense that it has influenced so much, and it must have been such a feat to undertake compared to what people can easily do now with computers.
Yeah. Let's do trivia questions. Woo! Bow, 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 bow. Well, let's take turns. I'll go first. What song was the cook listening to in the beginning of the movie?
Go for it.
Yep.
Was I buzzing in okay?
Yeah, buzzing in.
Superstition.
Superstition, yes, absolutely.
It's good foreshadowing, right?
It is very good foreshadowing. It's really good foreshadowing. And they were talking about how they didn't have the rights to that song, so when it came out on VHS, or when it came out on video, which at the time was VHS, they were unable to keep that bit in there. So they took that out of it.
What music did they use?
I don't know that they did. I think they just took that little scene out of it with the cook just coming down the hallway.
Because for me, that...
Oh God, I'm writing on the wall.
The most interesting thing about him listening to music, and I think I'm thinking of the same scene, is when the dog is walking down the hallway by itself. They show several interior shots of this bunker, this area that people are in, but they show like the storeroom, the hallway, the actual kitchen, and the music does change volume based on what scenes, like what place they're shooting in. So it helped me get a sense of like how close everything is to each other.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, you hear the very superstitious, super loud, and then the next shot, it cuts away, and the dog is in a much quieter hallway, but you can still hear the music in the background.
Oh, that's really
neat. I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
That's a good...
Yeah.
Good sound editing.
All right, Sarah, you got one?
All right. Which technological element of the movie did test audiences react negatively to because they said, that technology doesn't exist?
Ooh.
That's a good question. Was it that, Space Invaders type blood test that we watched?
Ding, ding, ding. You're correct.
Really?
It was the Space Invaders type blood test. Yeah, because there was no computer program at that time that could function that way.
Sure.
That could, like, input data. Yeah, that you could put data in and it would give you, like, succinct answers or be able to model it on screen like that.
Man, that
is like,
so funny.
Bullshit.
Yeah, well, and now 2015, we look at it and just laugh because it's so...
Rudimentary.
Rudimentary.
Yeah.
That is
it
so funny.
It looks like it's been programmed by elementary school kids.
Yeah. That's great.
That's hilarious.
Yep. Miss Amy, you got one for us?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
So this film was nominated for a Razzie Award.
Ooh.
And as you know, Razzie Awards are for negative things.
Yeah.
So it's the worst of something.
Uh-huh.
Which Razzie Award was this nominated for in 1983?
I'm going to guess worst lines, like worst, what is that called, like last action hero catchphrases. Yeah,
okay,
that's what I'm gonna guess.
And I'll guess worst monster makeup.
All right. It was actually nominated for best special effects, Sarah.
Oh,
not the Razzies, that was the Saturn Awards. But
no, shame
the
on me.
Razzie Award it was nominated for was the worst musical score.
Oh,
really?
Yeah,
that's surprising.
So people did not like Ennio, what's his name? Ennio something?
Morricone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah, they were not a fan of his score, and neither was I. It was like weird, like bass
mm-hmm.
beats, and then, or not beats.
Ambient electronic.
Yeah, and then super high-pitched synthesizer violin, I guess, was how I'd describe it. And it just sounded like a heartbeat.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah, I guess I didn't mind it. I liked the use of silence. I thought they did a neat job of, like, having the music cut out, you know, either right when someone got killed or when they panned over to someone deforming or something like that. I thought it was kind of neat. But I respect your opinion. Not
the Razzie opinion.
The Razzie opinion.
Yeah, we can email the Razzies, have them change it.
All right, guys. This is a, it was written, the story of this is written by a guy named John W. Campbell Jr., and it was written as a science fiction novella. This particular author is known to have started this type of science fiction. It's a specific type of science fiction.
Cool.
Do you know what type of, and we often, nowadays, almost all of our science fiction is this type of science fiction. Do you know what type of science fiction this is?
No. Is this a phrase that I would, like, hear and go, oh, I hear that all the time?
Maybe. If you are, if you read into writer things or story things, probably.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You maybe have heard it and maybe don't know exactly what it means. But this is a type of science fiction called hard science fiction.
Mm.
And they call it hard science fiction because it relies more on facts and more on the science of it instead of,
like fantastical elements.
Yeah. Instead of having like, oh, I have a time machine and who cares how it works? I just have one.
Right.
You know,
they had to explain a lot of things with the blood and say, you know, if human blood isn't a part of, it's a part of the whole, but in this case, alien or thing blood is its own entity.
Yeah.
And so they did do a lot of scientific, factual talking.
The numbers on the computer, like using those things. Yeah, hard science fiction.
That's
really cool.
Yeah, that author also helped to get like Isaac Asimov more popular, and a number of other science fiction writers that now are more hard science fiction people.
So, cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
My other question is, how did John Carpenter decide that he wanted Ennio Morricone to do the score? Like, where did they know each other from?
I think you had mentioned this before.
I did. I gave it away before we started.
His wedding?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, Morricone, I guess, did... he's a pretty prolific composer and arranger who, like... I mean, worked on a ton of movies. He ended up doing a bunch of Carpenter scores, but I think this may have been the first one he worked on with John Carpenter. And they had used, like, a very string-heavy composition at their wedding. Mm-hmm. You know, just something he had written for another project. Mm-hmm. And was kind of like, hey, that guy, that sounds cool. Maybe I'll see if he's interested. Yeah. Turns out he was interested. And then instead of picking, like, a more orchestral score... Mm-hmm. Morricone had been dabbling in electronic composition, and Carpenter really liked that, which is why there were a lot of, like, sounds, and not so many beautiful orchestrations.
Carpenter was like, man, my wedding was creepy. Let's use this in a better setting for some scare.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I have another one.
Hit me.
It's more of a numerical trivia. This... falls into IMDb's top 250 movies. Mm. I can tell you it is not in the top 100.
Uh-huh.
What? Give me a guess as to where you think it falls in the top 250.
283.
Well, that's out of the top 250.
283.
Sure, okay.
Perfect. 283.
All right, 283. Lisa.
283. I would say maybe like 192.
Yeah, I'll guess... 123.
Cool. It's at 165. Splits the two.
Ooh,
yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
We did it.
183,
though. 283.
Interesting that IMDb has a top 250 movies.
It's like user voted, though.
Yeah, so. But maybe, I mean, that still seems kind of nice to have a list, a comprehensive.
Yeah, because users will vote out of 10 stars.
Mm-hmm.
So this has a 8.2, which is relatively where all 8.2s fall, is like the 160 area.
Yeah. Huh. So people have felt very strongly about this when they have seen it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. People get really influenced by this movie. I have a lot of friends who are like, this movie has started me off in horror. Huh.
Really?
And so I think a lot of the stuff that we were not scared by are also... As someone who has a delicate constitution when it comes to scary movies,
yeah.
I like the, like, logical, slow-paced, scary movies. I love Alien. I love,
like Alien,
when things ramp up and where logic kind of takes away from how many times something jumps out of a dark corner of the room.
Yeah.
You know?
I love Alien, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if I love this movie.
I wouldn't jump into love with this movie, but I definitely can see why certain people appreciate it a lot.
There are a number of movies that are banned in a specific country due to extreme violence.
Mm.
This was no exception. King Kong, the very, very old King Kong, was also originally banned in this country. What country am I talking about?
Banned for extreme violence.
Mm-hmm.
Like Switzerland?
Close, is that your guess?
Oh, that is my guess.
Great. You're wrong, but close.
Happy to be wrong.
Maybe Norway.
Okay.
Maybe the Norwegians don't want to see their countrymen depicted as poor shots and bad helicopters.
I think it was Finland.
Was it? I thought it was Norwegian.
Oh, it was. They said, I don't speak Norwegian, is what they yelled.
But who knows?
Yeah.
Finland is correct. Finland is the right answer. So yeah, there are a number of movies that are banned in Finland for extreme violence, and this was also one of those movies that was banned.
It was for the violence. I was with Sarah. I thought it was like, this is reflecting poorly on our Dutch brethren.
I mean, that totally could have been part of it, where it's just like, I just don't want to see, like, because it... it definitely was kind of dismissive of those guys as being kind of like,
as being human. They just shot him right away.
Yeah.
I don't speak your language. You must be dumber and less valuable for
life. We gotta kill him.
Yeah. Cool. I have one more. This is specific to the movie. We were talking about those numbers that were on that screen, and they said that, you know, the world would end in so many days. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what they said the probability was of one of the other teammates or crew members being infected with this thing?
Yeah, I do, because it jumped out at me as, like, weird and not math.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the probability is definitely one of them. Like, that's essentially what it said.
It was, the probability was 75%, which is, like, a really funny, it was very specific and really funny, and usually when you get probabilities like that, you know, it would be, unless it's a very even number with no outside factors. Yeah. Without those, like, when you factor in those outside factors, it would be like a, you know, 6.667 or like a, there would be so many other factors that come into
it. It felt super simplistic.
It was so simplistic.
Like a really easy Punnett square you do in, like, biology, where you're like, if my dad has blue eyes and my mom has brown eyes, and then they have a child, like, with those alleles, technically brown eyes dominant, so I would have a recessive gene that wouldn't present itself, and you're like, that's super simple genetics.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, it seemed like their science was, like, very much, like, out of six people, 75% could be infected.
Yes. Yeah. It was really simple math.
Math at all. It might have just been a number.
Which, I am with that audience that was really against that technology. Yeah. So, woof. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming and talking to me about The Thing.
Hooray.
It's October. Are you doing anything October that we should know about?
It's October. October is the month of Tribulation, which is a musical at IO Theater. Mm-hmm. It's going to go up in the Mission, and we play on Sundays at 8 o'clock. But it's about the apocalypse and defeating the Antichrist. So if you're into, like, light horror and nonsense, then that would be a good show to come see.
Yeah. What about you, Amy?
Where can I find you? I play regularly with a team called Baby Wine. Mm-hmm. It's all gay improv. Mm-hmm. That's pretty horrific. We're all monsters. I'd say right now we're playing every Friday at the IO Theater. Uh-huh. And look for upcoming dates at the Annoyance Theater. I think that is in the works. So Baby Wine is what you want to look for, and look for it at any theater, because we'll be all over it.
Hooray!